Welcome to Originality, the podcast where we talk about creativity, creative expression, and the roots of creative genius. I am one of your hosts, Celine Sims, and I am joined by...
Kate Tempest Bradford.
I am so tired and punchy, I feel like I'm a game show announcer right now.
Oh, it's great. No, it's awesome. Yeah.
So, Tempest, do you know what's happening right now?
We're recording a bonus episode. Bonus episode for Relay FM members. Hey, Relay FM members. Hello.
I am so excited. I've never done a podcast like this before. I've done Originality obviously for a while now, but what we're doing is not something that I've done before. So I'm really anxious to see how it turns out. I don't know yet. It's going to be great, though.
Yeah.
So, Tempest, because it was your idea, do you want to tell everybody what we're doing?
Sure. So, when we first were talking about this podcast and what we were going to do, we were basically saying that we wanted to get at, like, where ideas come from. And one of our sort of, like, baby original ideas for, like, the name of this podcast was The Idea Factory of Schenectady, New York. And the reason why that was going to be our thing was because author Harlan Ellison very famously would answer the question that people would ask him all the time, where do your ideas come from, with the Idea Factory in Schenectady, New York. They produce them there. I send away for them. They send them to me. That's where I get ideas from. And he said, I don't know if this is true, but he said that people would always then say, and where is that? Can I get that address?
I would like to have that address.
The Idea Factory. And so, yes. But then we were like, maybe Harlan Ellison actually owns that Schenectady thing. So we didn't call it that. We called it something else. But, you know, that is actually a question that writers and other creators get all the time. People are like, but where do your ideas come from? And it's always hilarious when somebody knows that they are asking that question, but they know it's a cliche, so they try to like couch it in some other like highfalutin language. But basically it boils down to, where do your ideas come from? And so we thought, well, what if we just asked a bunch of writers and artists and other creative folks where their ideas come from so that you all can know, like, where to go, like, because I don't know if that Idea Factory is even in Schenectady anymore. It might have gone out of business, because really Schenectady is hard to get to. It's really cold in the winter.
Yeah. And tax incentives, I don't know what the tax incentives in New York are like. Yeah.
So we got to know, like, where the ideas are coming from now. So that's why we asked a bunch of people to let us know where their ideas come from. So that's what this episode is.
All right, let's get to it.
So where do I get my ideas? That's easy. Schenectady, New York. No, that's not true. But that's the answer Harlan Ellison used to give when people would ask him, where do you get all your ideas? And he got tired of explaining how a writer's mind works. He would say, I get a six-pack of fresh ideas from a subscription service based in Schenectady, New York. They come every Thursday. I keep one or two of them and toss the rest. And people who didn't get that he was kidding would say, hey, could I have the extra ones? Or, hey, could I sign up? What's the address? And he would just look at them like they were insane. So where do I, in fact, get my ideas? They come from everywhere. I mean, some of them could come from Schenectady. Who knows? But roadside signs, questions my children ask, a song on the radio, a dream, anything. I was raised by writers, and especially my mother trained me to pay attention, keep my ears open, keep my brain open, be willing to realize something might make a good idea for a story or a play or a podcast. I was reading the New York Times just because that's a thing I do, and there was a story about Vincent Van Gogh and letters from Van Gogh. And what was interesting about it is that most of the letters we have are to his brother Theo, and they're asking for money for brushes and paints and canvases. But this set of letters, it's a very small set, it's about 20, were to a fellow artist who eventually became an art critic named Emile Bernard. I had never heard of him before. I was very curious. And because he was writing peer to peer, in these letters, he's talking about why this scene, why the framing of this image, why these colors here and this color there and this variation and this shading and why the light does this to that. And they were fascinating. And my brain immediately said, there's a play in there. I don't know what the play is. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but that's a play. And I wrote it down and I saved the article and I bought the companion book to the exhibit that was showing off the letters in New York City. A couple of years later, an opportunity came up. A college was doing a year-long project on Van Gogh and called us up, called up our theater company and said, hey, we'd love to have you come to a show. Do you have anything on Van Gogh? And I said, funny you should say that. I have an idea right here. And sure enough, 6 months later, we had a one-man show about Vincent Van Gogh written about Bernard. Most of the play is Bernard speaking and telling the story of Van Gogh and Paul Gauguin and the Yellow House at Arles. And he had the chance to be a third artist living there, and he didn't take it. And so part of it is about regret and the road not taken. And it's a lovely play. It's not something I ever set out to write. It's not something I was burning to write, but I'm very glad I wrote it. It's one of my favorite things that isn't a radio theater podcast. So, yeah, that's just one example. Ideas can come from anywhere if you're paying attention. And if they ever stop, I'm getting in the car and going to Schenectady, New York, because you never know.
Hello, this is Leanna Renee Huber, author of Gothic Victorian Fantasy, and I get my ideas from some of my childhood obsessions, because I think you need to be obsessed with things in order to finish a book. So I look at the things that have driven me ever since I was a kid. So the themes that Edgar Allan Poe was drawn to, the themes that all of the Gothic authors have found time and again to be interesting. I love trope, and I love playing with trope. So I like big stories that have fantastical things that are happening. So I'm drawn to theme mostly in terms of it was a dark and stormy night and then what happened. And sometimes I'm really inspired by, most of the time I'm really inspired by external things, art, historic places. History itself is so fascinating, and especially the undertold, the underrepresented stories in history and women's voices through history. So I have these things that are drawing me along every book, unanswered questions about where in history people were trying to find their way and how, in terms of the ghostly things and the fantastical things, also those questions that the 19th century kept asking. I am interested in those questions, too. They were fascinated by life and death and ghosts, and so am I. And I think that we find a lot of humanity in those places. So whether it's a ghost story, whether it's a haunted house, whether it's a historic site, whether it's a wing of the art museum showing me art that just stirs my soul, I find that external visual cues from history really help me make it's a connective step for me in my writing to have those external tactile cues when history is still alive for us in pieces and sites and places and art in music. And that all swirls around into a big pot, and somehow I make a book out of all of that. I'm one of those pantsers rather than a plotter. So in that atmospheric swirl of the dark and stormy night that all of those interests create, I try to ask questions and make a way forward. So thank you for listening, and I am excited for all of you to be exploring your own new ideas and creative paths.
This is Sam Miller. I am an author of super gay science fiction, including my debut novel, The Art of Starving, which was just published by Harper Keen. And where do my ideas come from? They come to me from the great beyond, usually in the form of songs that come up when my phone's MP3 player is on shuffle. I sincerely believe that I'm getting messages in the songs that come up when they come up, which usually helps crystallize an idea or set of ideas around something. Often I will have a couple dozen different story ideas bouncing around inside my head that come from places like websites I saw and anecdotes that people told me and things I learned in school a billion years ago. And usually it takes something like a song or other serendipitous stroke to make them come together just right and for me to see exactly what makes sense and how they can come together and how a set of facts or figures or stories or ridiculous absurdities can make sense as a story. So primarily, where do my ideas come from? The shuffle function on my music player.
I'm Cameron Hurley, author of The Stars Are Legion, also known as Lesbians in Space. I also wrote a little Hugo Award-winning essay called We Have Always Fought and a ton of other things. I am super cool and awesome, and you should all read my stuff. But aside from that, I know what you're really here for, and it's to learn where I get my ideas from. I get my ideas from the deep sewers, from the depths of despair and muck that everyone just leaves behind. Think of all the things you leave behind in the sewers. That's where I collect my ideas. I skim the surface and dive deep when I really, really need to, as we all do, looking for ideas in the sewers where I find them.
Hello, I'm Peter Newman. I'm the co-writer of the Alfie Award-winning and Hugo Award-winning podcast, Tea and Jeopardy, with Emma Newman. I'm also a fantasy writer, and my first trilogy, The Vagrant Series, has just come to a close. I'm also a wild cards writer. And people often ask, Pete, where do you get your ideas from? And, you know, some people think that we as writers pluck ideas out of the air. But this is not true. We actually pluck them from somewhere else. So I'm going to let you into a secret today. I have an ideas plant, all right? And I grow that plant. It's a very special mix. You have to feed it of television and radio and other books. And generally speaking, as many good ideas from other people that you can steal. And you feed them into the plant. And the plant grows. And when it's ready, it will bear fruit. Now, the other thing I should tell you, a lot of writers won't tell you this, but the truth is you can only grow an ideas plant in certain very special places. So, you know, greenhouses don't work and you can't plant them in a wood. You have to actually take the ideas seed and swallow it yourself. So I actually grow my ideas plant inside my gut. And when the idea is ready and ripe and good to write, I pluck it out of my arse and I just write it straight down there. So that's where I get my ideas from.
All right. I am one of your originality hosts, Aline Sims, and I am going to tell you the true story of where ideas come from. Long ago, before time even existed, Earth realized she was lonely. To ease this burden, she started creating. The air from her lungs formed the atmosphere, and the sweat from her brow formed the sea, which grew deeper as she toiled to shape all sorts of creatures. She made everything, from the smallest amoeba to all manner of leviathan. Over the eons, she made dinosaurs and mammoths and elephants, monkeys and great apes. She loved watching them grow and evolve, nurtured by other, more literal fruits of her labor. And while these creatures' antics brought her great joy and amusement, something was still missing. While she could and did talk to her creations, they couldn't respond in kind. They could roar and chatter and trumpet, but Earth couldn't carry on a conversation with any of them. Eventually, she realized that what she really needed was companionship. And so Earth created the first girl. Earth would cradle the child in her arms at night and whisper stories about the beginning of life and what mischief the tigers or spiders had been up to that day. And how the child flourished. Under Earth's watchful eye, she would race cheetahs and play with newborn elephants and giggle with chimpanzees. She would catch bugs and frogs and watch them closely. Earth would laugh as she plucked twigs and leaves out of her child's tight black curls, wash the dusty sand from her dark skin, and recount the day's antics. One night, Earth realized that her child never made things. No new animal sprang to life from the child's hands, nor did she tell stories or construct toys. Earth thought about how much richer her life was for her creations, and she was saddened at the thought that her child may never have such an experience. Earth cried great tears, creating lakes and rivers in the process. The night was so cold and damp that her child awakened, shivering and crying tears of her own from her discomfort. Earth scooped up her child and, seeing what she'd done, reached to her heart and removed a single spark. "Take this," she told her child, "and place it in your own heart." The child did and was instantly comforted and warmed, and soon she was fast asleep once again. The next morning, the child played just like she had every day before, but Earth noticed the ground was littered with figures made from thick mud. The next day, Earth spied a lizard she'd never seen before. On the third day, the child told Earth stories about her day for the first time. Soon, she was making up tales so fantastic, Earth could hardly believe they came from her child. And so the spark grew into a full flame. Eventually, when Earth's child created a child of her own, she made sure to include a spark from her heart's own flame. And this is why, to this day, ideas are ignited from the smallest sparks.
Hello, originality. My name is Brian, and lately I've been getting my creativity from Dungeons and Dragons. Aside from being surrounded by incredibly smart and supportive people in every campaign I've been doing, it's given me an incredible way to structure out what I want to do. So I've taken lessons from D&D, like, I'm in a big, scary, haunted house. What do I do? And I'm a diplomat in a foreign country going to war. What do I do? Two, I'm in a word processor right now. What do I do? I'm in my video editing software. What do I do? I'm recording a podcast right now. What do I do? And setting up structures for myself for me to play around within have really helped me flourish inside of those structures. Thank you so much for such a great show, and happy Members Month.
My name is Karen Lanzmann. I'm a doctor with a specialty in epidemiology and an author. And my first book is coming up March next year. And I have a blog, a website called realitybugs.me. And it's about diseases and everything that's going to kill us. Some things that don't kill us. People ask me where I get my ideas, and I give them the most honest and sincere answer that I can, which is aliens.
Hi, I'm Ken Liu. I'm an author and translator. A lot of people know me because of my short story, The Paper Menagerie, which won the Nebula, the Hugo, and the World Fantasy Awards. And a lot of people also know me for my novel, The Grace of Kings, the first in a silk punk epic fantasy series. So people ask me all the time, where do I get my ideas from? And the answer is surprisingly simple. See, I don't even have to go out to look for ideas. They come looking for me. I open my email, and once in a while, there will be this email popping up in my inbox. Actually, it's not in the inbox. I have to go to a special folder called SPAM to find it. But it's right there, and the title is in all caps, and it says, All Good Ideas. You open it up, and it's always from some really helpful individual who I don't know. I mean, the internet is full of strangers. That's one of the things I love about the internet. It's full of strangers who are willing to help you out. And the stranger would often start out by introducing themselves. I mean, their English often is a little bit weird, and you have to sort of read past the weird spelling and grammatical errors, but we shouldn't judge people on that. So they say things like, hi, I'm so-and-so. I love working with authors. I have a file full of 100 awesome ideas. I've always wanted to be a writer, but I'm just too busy to actually write. I hear that you know how to write, so I'm willing to give you 100 ideas in exchange for you writing the stories for me. And if you do a good job, I'm willing to let you keep maybe 25 cents of every dollar I make. Is that a deal or what? And as soon as you open the file, you accept my awesome proposal. So I heard that some writers, for who knows what reason, actually refuse to open these emails and they just delete them. I don't understand why. I mean, why would you do such a thing? Me being the sort of awesome, crafty type that I am, would open up these files and simply use the ideas to write my awesome stories. And I don't actually owe these people any money because, you see, I'm a lawyer and I know that what they've done here is not an offer and what I've done is no acceptance. So there's no contract. There's no problem whatsoever with using these ideas. You are not under any obligation whatsoever to send these helpful strangers on the internet any money. And also, these are the same strangers who usually have princes or former communist officials on their staff who have large amounts of money that they want to sneak out of their country, and they're also looking for you to help them. And my view is, you know, take their money. Demand that they send you the money first and take the money and don't need to offer any help because you don't want to do anything illegal. You know, again, as a lawyer, I tell you, take their money, but don't do anything for them. So that's me, Ken Liu, and that's where I get my ideas from.
My name is Emma Newman. I'm an author, audiobook narrator, and podcaster. Our podcast, Tea and Jeopardy, can be found at teaandjeopardy.com, and we won a Hugo last night. Yay! Where do ideas come from? People think that they just kind of appear randomly, but that's not actually true. There's a very small cove on the southwest coast of Cornwall that can only be reached at high tide and only in a boat. You can't reach it by foot unless you want to risk horrible death on the cliffs. And in this cave collects all of the bones of the people who die on the rocks when they're shipwrecked around Cornwall. And over the years, there have been a lot of people that have died off the coast of Cornwall. And because of the currents and the tides, their bones, their bodies get washed into this particular cave in the southwest cove. And as they rot down, those kind of philosophical nutrients that gather in people's bodies go into the sea, they get carried out by the currents, and because of the amazing water cycle, they get collected up with the rainwater, or made into rainwater when it evaporates off the sea. And so these ideas in their kind of raw essence form float across the world being rained on people. And people who write and create things, they just have got a little bit more wet than other people. And it's kind of seeped into them. And that's where their ideas come from. And then they write stories. What they don't realize is that they have actually entered into a mythical contract. So when they die, fate is going to conspire to bring their bones back to that cove so that those raw essence ideas can be recycled back into the water cycle so we never run out of stories. It's all true.
Hi, Dan Morin here. World-famous author, podcaster, general bon vivant. I'm here to tell you where creativity comes from. Most people don't know that creativity comes from a small stone that is originally buried at the bottom of the deepest part of the ocean. And that may seem hard to access, but every once in a millennium, a fish comes along, a fish that lives deep in those dark recesses, and that fish eats that stone. And that fish swims around for a while. That fish is then eaten by a bigger fish, which is in turn eaten by a larger fish still, until eventually it is eaten by a very large fish indeed. And that fish is in turn caught, perhaps, by a fisherman. And it makes its way through the fishing channels, eventually to a grocery store, perhaps to a restaurant, until one day someone cuts open a fillet of fish in a fancy restaurant and finds a small stone. That person is then chosen to be the creative force in the world for the next millennium. And so I think what's important to remember about creativity in all of this is that it is rare, it is precious, and it is best served with tartar sauce.
Hi, My name is Alethea Contis. I am an author, costumer, and voice actress. I get my ideas from this fairy who lives with me. She doesn't identify as a muse, but I know she's descended from one. But, I mean, she's also got some pixie and goblin and maybe a little brownie. Really, she's just an American like me. Anyway, she prefers cream, but she'll settle for half and half, which is what I put in my coffee, so that totally works out. I leave her offerings under my pillow, candy, dried flowers, but I totally draw the line at dead mice. It's disgusting. If she's pleased with my offering, she lets me remember my dream. But if she's not pleased, she only lets me remember that I had this awesome Broadway-level dream, but I can only remember the last line or the last verse of the song. It really sucks. She's evil. Anyway, I know I'm tough to live with, but, you know, she might have flown off years ago. However, we both have an affinity for glitter and really shiny tiaras, so she sticks around, which is good. We've made it work out. So that's me, Alethea Contis, and my American fairy. You can find me online at patreon.com/princessalethea or anywhere else on the internet under Alethea Contis, A-L-E-T-H-E-A-K-O-N-T-I-S.
Hi. This is Charlie J. Anders, author of All the Birds in the Sky. I organize Writers with Drinks, a reading series in San Francisco, and you can find out more about that at writerswithdrinks.com. And I get my ideas from a giant wall of brains in the basement of my house. They're all in little jars, and they just kind of sit there bubbling away, and the chemicals that they're bathing in kind of change color if one of them has an idea, and then I can, like, pull it out of the jar and kind of plug into it and get the idea from the brain. Unfortunately, all of these brains are clones of the same person's brain, and they all, it was like this brush salesman who used to come to my house all the time and annoy me talking about how brushes would scrub all of the iniquity from the grout in my shower and also from, like, my soul and everything. And so I finally had to take his brain and clone him a whole bunch of times and put him in my basement. And it's annoying because all of their ideas are terrible. They all have ideas about, like, you know, selling brushes and different ways that you could sell brushes and brushes that could, like, really stain, scrub the iniquity from a person's soul with, like, extra scrubbing power. And, like, it just, they have terrible ideas. They're a total waste of time. So I started, like, electric shocking them to get them to have better ideas. Just, like, if they give me a dumb idea, I shock them really hard. But they like that. They really like that. And so now they're all competing to have the worst possible ideas so that they can get shocked the most. And that's pretty much, those are the ideas I use. The idea, the worst ideas that the brains in my basement use after I've shocked them a lot of times and they're trying to get me to keep shocking them. Those are the ideas that tend to pan out for me for some reason. Once they get really, really excited and, like, you know, they're just like, yeah, come on, more voltage. You know, that's when the ideas get really, really bad and terrible because they're deliberately trying to force me to, like, keep electrocuting them. And, you know, it's not a healthy situation. I don't think it's probably a good relationship to have with the brains in your basement. I'm a little worried about it. But, you know, hopefully we'll work something out and they'll be able to, like, hire a professional dominatrix to shock them and I'll get my ideas somewhere else eventually. But anyway, that's what I'm doing for now. Cool. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, this is listener Jason. I wanted to tell you about where creativity comes from. So for me, what I like to do is I like to get my creativity from the table, usually with a board game. So I'll draw a map of the world that I want to build, or if it's set in the house, it'll be like a blueprint of the house. And then I get tokens. Sometimes it can be coins or action figures, and those represent my characters. I will sometimes use a label maker, like a Brother P touch, to put the label of who the character is that's the action figure or a coin. And then those people are, I move them around and act out the plot of the story. Usually I like to have voices for each of the characters so that I can say, hello there, and things like that when I move a coin from, like, one room to another room, or if I have to bring an action figure down from the polar north to the equatorial jungle, and I can say, oh, it's very hot down here, and things like that. And I find that when you're looking at the coins or action figures on the map or blueprint, and they have conversations with each other, that's where really great storytelling comes from. So I hope this helps everybody else, and your table is your friend.
Hi, my name is Monica Molinelli. I'm an author and game designer coming to you live on the road to yet another convention. The question today was, where do I get my ideas from? And my answer, well, there's really only one. Caffeine, of course. I mean, I have like a pot of coffee in the morning, maybe another pot in the afternoon. Yeah, I guess I drink a lot of coffee, but it's what fuels my creative spirit and keeps it going. So I guess there's something to be said for being addicted to that sort of substance anyway. So yes, I get my creative ideas from caffeine. Thanks for having me on the show. Bye.
My name is Lee Moyer. I'm an illustrator, a designer, all sorts of things like that. LeeMoyer.com is good. LeeMoyer.ninja might be even better. It's totally secret, though, so don't tell anyone. Ninja.ninja. So, I've just finished Sean and Maguire's most recent encrypted cover, which is called Tricks for Free. And my ideas, when they don't come from Seanan, come from the very center, the very ancient center of Riga in Latvia. It's covered in stone. There are certain things you would have to do to find the exact source, and I am not currently at liberty to disclose any of those rituals or ancient rites. I will suggest to you that they involve, and I know this may sound abstract, they involve American chocolate, Spanish surrealism, and Russian bureaucracy. Now, the right combination is almost impossible to achieve, but it has been worth it for me. Good luck.
And then should we do a quick outro?
I don't know. I think we should just let it trail off.
Okay, we can do that.
Yeah.